part by a grant from Birkenstock Concepts by Heel to Toe in downtown Urbana. For over 25 years, offering all sizes and widths of Birkenstocks, from clogs and sandals to work, dress, and sport shoes. Birkenstock Concepts offers repair and modification services and a certified podorthist and orthotist on staff. Programs on WILL are made possible in part by a grant from Christopher's Fine Jewelry Design, a gallery of imaginative jewelry and gifts in downtown Champaign, offering one-of-a-kind custom design, gemstone round tables, and conflict-free diamonds direct from Canada.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. It's the first Friday of the month, the first Friday of November, and we're going to talk about dogs this afternoon. Jim Keel is not with us, as usual, but we have a special guest.
Is not with us, as usual.
That's right. You're going to play his role today,
aren't you?
Okay, you're in his seat. Jim Keel is not here. He's usually here with us. Carol Lindholm is here. She's usually with us as well, but we have a special guest with us this afternoon. Harriet Weatherford, the interim director of the Humane Society of Champaign County, is here with us. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Anyway, on this show, on the first Friday of the month, we talk about dogs and we talk about caring for dogs. We talk about behavior and training. So that's what we're about here this afternoon. Listeners, you can join us with questions and comments. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Carol is with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and she and Harriet are also members of the canine sport team. That's the Flyball Group. And in addition to being interim director of the Humane Society, Harriet is also with Canine Connection, which is a therapy.
Right, that's pet-assisted therapy. A group of us realized a need for another alternative for therapy in the city, and that is using pets. So we have our dogs. I think there are 17 people in the group now, and our dogs are trained to be able to work with people going through therapy and people with disabilities. We do one-on-one therapy at Carl Hospital for things like providing motivation to the clients to get them, you know, to work harder. I think a lot of times when a client is bored with therapy or it's painful, the animal can be a tool to encourage them to work. And just recently, we started working with children at Cunningham Children's Home and also the Youth Detention Center in Urbana to try to give these kids a positive relationship with an animal to get them to feel empathy and sympathy towards another. Type of animal.
Yeah, it's amazing how animals can draw us out, isn't it?
I think animals bring out the best of us, the best in us. And we've worked with children with behavior problems, and those of us in the group with dogs are pretty amazed. We don't see any behavior problems, and the counselors tell us that. The children behave so much better in the sessions with the animals, and that there's actually a carryover after we leave, that they treat their peers and their counselors better. So the animals are just wonderful therapists.
Yeah. How often do you get out and do that?
Well, actually, there's something going on all of the time. We just finished a six-session stint over at Cunningham Children's Home with a group, and there's a couple of members who are doing one-on-one programs now. We're going to the Youth Detention Center about every 3 weeks, and there's usually a couple of sessions, either one-on-one or group, at Carl each week as well.
Okay, very good.
She's filling for Jim just fine, isn't she?
Yeah.
No, I'm the straight one.
We have to warn you about two calls. I think Jim is planning on calling in. And if you get a call from an unidentified male who might disparage our our dogs and their untrained levels,
yeah,
just, Harriet's dog and mine.
Yeah, yeah. Just to cut,
so
them,
we'll just,
cut them off
yeah,
if
cut
there's
off.
Anybody. Yeah. My significant other is laughing because he says we don't have a well-trained dog between us. And well, you know, well, we have good dogs.
They're good. And as I've said, I love Robbie's zest for life. I wouldn't want to change that. So there are times it crosses my mind. It'd be nice if he were a little better, but he's fun.
Well, yeah, that's what he's about. You've compared yourself to the, you know, the shoemaker's children.
With, exactly. You know. Proudly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we have fun.
So what's new at the dog training club?
Oh, classes are about to finish, and then we'll go on our little hiatus over the holiday season and begin classes again in January. We had at our meeting Tuesday night, we did have the – well, I should trace back and explain why Harriet's here.
Okay.
The Humane Society's fifth annual fetching ball was held October 8th, and one of the items up for bid was coming on the radio with me. Now, if it had been with Jim – $5 maybe we would have gotten for that. That would be a stretch. But they got to come on the radio with me. Well, the high bidder really shocked me because she was afraid to come on. And Harriet was the
second. And her name is Lisa.
Lisa. We won't say her last name.
But
she's so articulate and fun and bubbly and a strong woman, but she was reduced to jello to think of having to sit and talk on the radio. So anyway, Harriet was the second highest bidder. So that's why Harriet's
so
here.
So this
with
is
us
the best
today.
Of all possible worlds. Lisa paid, and I'm here.
That's not bad. Not bad at all. And listeners, you can join us this afternoon. You can talk on the radio with a telephone call.
And they don't have to pay today, right?
No. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Let me give those numbers again a little more slowly. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. No, they would have made their pledges last month, right?
Oh, yes, they would have. They would already be in.
They're in good
standing. They can still send the check.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or an additional gift, I'm sure.
Checks are accepted at any time, aren't they?
They are. Well, we've talked about the dog training club. Is there anything you'd like to bring us up to date on as far as the Humane Society?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we are absolutely full of animals right now. As a matter of fact, we have almost 600 animals in the care of the Humane Society now. They're not all available for adoption, but many, many are. And we have – one of the things I think people don't understand about the Humane Society is that we have, as well as our wonderful mixed-breed dogs, we have purebred dogs as well. Right now, I think there are three Cocker Spaniels out there.
There are three. That's right.
Yeah, there are three. They're the,
and they're all three buff.
Yeah.
They're all buff colored.
Yeah, they're buff. And that we have different ages, too. But really nice, nice dogs. There's also a blue merle, rough-coated collie that's 2 years old. It's mostly white, blue merle. And I was talking to one of the dog walkers right before he came, and he said, this dog is just such a pleasure to get in and out of the runs and take for a walk. So we have those nice, nice dogs. There's a dog that I'm sort of smitten with. And that's Sparta.
Oh, I'm holding Sparta's card. Sparta is a remarkable dog. He is he's black, and he's a chow lab mix, which we get an extraordinary number of that type of mix, chow mixes. This dog, though, when I first saw him, he is incredibly friendly. He's very nice. His cage card indicates he's about 2 years old. He's there because his family's moving, which is a common excuse. He was an outdoor dog, but he couldn't be an indoor dog very easily. Chows are very easy. Chow mix are incredibly easy to house train. They're very fastidious animals, and actually, we see very few of them at the dog training club. And I always wondered about that because you see a lot of chows, but you don't see many in classes. Well, they're very easy to live with. They're very easy to work with, and they're ideal companions. Anyway, Sparta, not only is he a very beautiful dog, but he's incredibly friendly. And he's friendly with men, women, children, and dogs. And we're able to discern this because the dogs are tested. There's a certain test, and it's called the SAFER test, S-A-F-E-R, and these dogs are tested. And the protocol, I think, consists of 5 to 7 to 9.
Yes.
And they're exposed to cats and dogs, and we drag kids in off the street, of course. But they're put in situations that their behavior, the predictability, you know, if they with food, for example, if they mind that they're having their food disturbed, they get exposed to cats, and they're graded according to that. So by the time these comments appear, we're fairly certain that this is accurate because they've been tested and they've proven. So this dog, he's 2 years old. You're past your housebreaking stage, past your chewing, major chewing stage, a beautiful companion that you'll have for another 10 or 12 years easily. And we've got so many of them out there. Every single run has a dog in it. I'm spending a lot of time out there now again, and it's always heartwarming to me to see those blue dots that means they're adopted, mm-hmm. because I know that whoever has adopted these dogs, they couldn't have found a better companion for their family.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what's the situation with cats out there?
You want one?
I have one. He's not cat friendly. He'd flunk that part of the test.
We're going to make some flyers we're putting out, and it's going to say, "I bet you can't adopt just one." We have 449 cats right now. We have big cats, little cats. I tell everybody, if you can't find the small dog you want, how about a big cat? We have some cats that must weigh 17 pounds. They're huge and so very nice. I wanted to tell you about this one cat that we have. It's Fuzzy. And Fuzzy is a 14-year-old spayed female cat. And Fuzzy's there because her owner died. And I think that's one of the saddest reasons that we get animals. We often get animals when the owner goes to a nursing home or dies. And we have a commitment to all of the animals. But when you have a 14-year-old, you know, that one really mm-hmm. has had a home for a long time and deserves to get back there soon. And we have a 5-year-old tiger that's also a calico. Did I say that Fuzzy's a calico?
No, you didn't.
Fuzzy's a calico.
Calico,
long-haired calico. But we have and we have some cats, people who have to have declawed cats. We have a couple that are already declawed. And have you seen Spock, Carol? Have you seen Spock?
I'm sure I've seen him, but I'm
his. He's got a split in his front paws. He just looks like, you know, live long and prosper, just like Spock. He's gray and white, just a really, really nice cat. But we're still getting kittens in, and it's a little late for that, but we're still getting them in. So we've been brainstorming lots of ways to try to find homes for these cats. A lot of people, like you, say they have a cat that won't accept another one, and you know, that's the case. But we need to reach people that do have a cat
sure.
and get a pet for their cat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, cats, you know, cats and dogs get along fine together. Two cats together in the home, or three. They have companionship during the day. We're preparing some new handouts that help people bring a new cat into the home, a little form of code of conduct that you should follow and introduce them slowly. So we're working on that. Our shelter's not alone in this. To me, it's a cat overpopulation crisis. And years ago, I think the dog people started to get it. And the cats, we still just have too many. I mean, when you have in a community our size over 400 cats in our care, and that number will bounce back and forth, that's an enormous responsibility on us to try and find homes for them. But it indicates to me, and I don't mean to sound harsh, a lack of irresponsibility. That's the reason they're there. So whatever we can do to get some cats adopted, we'll do.
Right, right. A woman I've had on the program from time to time who's a feline behaviorist, her latest book is about bringing another cat into your home. And her name is Pam Bennett Johnson, and we should get her back on the program again. But it's doable.
Oh,
very
sure.
Doable.
You know, when people bring two dogs together, I think they're probably more cautious because dogs are far more easy to read than cats are. But introducing two cats just takes a little time and a little effort and a little thought. And if you do things correctly, then you'll more than likely have two good friends for life. So, you know, I had a cat, too, that was not particularly gregarious when it came to having other cats, which prevented me from even attempting to introduce another cat because she had the two dogs. So, you know, but having had multiple dogs, I think the same applies for cats. It's no more difficult, a little more expensive, yes, but no more difficult to give a home to more than one animal.
Mm-hmm. You know, at the Humane Society now, we have a special deal. It's called the Miss Garbo Fund. And we have a really generous donor who said that for anyone who adopts the second adult cat, she will pay the adoption fee. So we don't like to say two for one or get buy one, get one free. But really, the second fee is waived for the adopter when they get the second one.
And the key to that is adult.
Adult.
Because
over a year.
Kittens and puppies, they don't need any special promotion.
Yeah.
I mean, people, you know, kitten, puppy, it doesn't matter what they're going to look like or what they look like then or the fact that they've got months of work ahead of them. That's what they want. But the benefit of having an adult dog or cat can't be counted.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Carol Lindholm and Harriet Weatherford with us this afternoon here on the first Friday of the month, the day we talk about dogs, dog care, behavior, and training. Harriet is the interim director of the Humane Society here in Champaign County, and so we're talking about cats and dogs, and we're talking about adopting animals as well. Listeners, you can join the discussion this afternoon with a telephone call, 333-9455, the number to call in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Okay, well, so for someone who is thinking about getting a dog or a cat, adopting an animal, or if a family is thinking about getting a dog or a cat, what are the things that they need to consider before they can say, we're ready to make this commitment?
Well, they really have to look at their lifestyle. They have to think about how much time they have available for an animal. They have to think, you know, do they like to be out jogging or playing frisbee in the backyard, or do they like to be sitting and watching TV? That's going to dictate the kind of animal they're going to have. They also have to look and see who really wants this animal. For example, you know, if the kids want it and the parents don't, who's going to take care of the animal? And, you know, let's face it, you can't depend on children always having the attention span to want to take full responsibility for the animal. The parents have to understand that the animal has to be taken care of no matter what, and it's you know, ultimately up to them. But they really have to look then at, you know, do they have the money for the care of the animal? You know, there's ongoing veterinary care, you know, just like us. They need to go to the vet every year. I guess I need to go to the vet every year. But, well, I do. But
very good.
Yeah. That was a gymism, okay?
Yeah, so imitation of one, but it'll pass.
Okay, all right. I go to the vet every year, and so do all of my animals. But there's an expense to that.
Yeah.
Plus just the food and the flea treatment and the heartworm preventative, it's actually, if you just do the minimum, it's several hundred dollars every year. So family needs to look at those things as well. And then there's the training issues. You know, even if you have a good dog, like Carol and I have good dogs, they really do need some training. If you're going to take them out in public, they have to be well socialized to other people. They need to be able to walk well in a loose lead and not jump. In the home, you know, housebreaking, and that's going to take some time. The other thing, when someone's bringing an animal in, pretty much any kind of animal, they have to think about destruction. When I talk to a family about adopting, especially a puppy, I ask the kids, what's your favorite thing? And they tell me the favorite thing. And I say, what are you going to do when your pet destroys that favorite thing? And, you know, because, you know, it's not just food. You have to keep their environment safe as well.
She's saying that, and my remote controls, every remote control we have in the house has duct tape on it and scotch tape on it, and it's been dropped and it's been carried because those are his favorite things, are the remote controls. And, you know, he doesn't chew them up, but it's, to me, it's rather endearing, so I don't get upset. But, you know, a child that has their favorite toy and they see it being merrily carried off in the mouth of the family pet,
mm-hmm.
they don't have that ability to find these things endearing, and they get upset. So I think those of us dog people, do an awful lot of activities with our dog, which most families don't do. But I often stop and think that, well, last night, for example, I don't care if it's cold, windy, raw, and nasty. I've got to take my dog for a good hour's walk in the evening. Because if I don't, I'm not being fair to him. He's not being exercised, and he needs that. And it's good for me, too. But if you think of a family with young children, that time to spend an hour walking the dog doesn't exist for them unless they do it at 3 in the morning. So I think that, you know, Harriet was so right. We see so many animals that are relinquished to us because it says, don't have time for. And that's a very honest statement. But taking the time to realize maybe we should just wait until, you know, another year or two till the children are older and then the adults have more time. You know, that's a great home for a cat.
Right.
It'd be a great home for a cat. So dogs do require a larger time commitment. I think, too, there's more of a dollar commitment, too, with dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Any decision that you make, you should spend as much time making that decision as you would buying the next family car.
Yeah.
And that often isn't the case.
Yeah.
The other thing is to realize that these dogs are going to live a long time. A dog, you know, can live an average 14, 15 years. You know, some small breeds longer, huge breeds shorter. But, you know, that's a commitment that I ask people to think about. Do you understand that you're going to have this dog for, you know, another 10, 15 years? And does that fit in your lifestyle? Especially an animal coming from a shelter, it's already lost its home once. And we don't want to have them have a series of homes. We want them to be in a permanent situation where they can flourish and be happy. And, of course, we want the owners to be happy with them as well. So the match is so very, very important.
Yeah. Well, talk with us a little bit more about how you make that match with somebody who's coming in. For instance, the cat, the adult cat that's 14 years old is going to need a very different kind of home than a cat that's 6 months old or a year and a half old.
Right.
Well, we're working on some things with cats that these older cats, this cat particular, it may live another 2 or 3 years, it may live to be past 20, it may live another year. So the adoptive family has to adopt an animal knowing that it's not going to live forever or it's not going to live 20 more years. And they may incur some more medical expenses than they would if they had a younger dog. And this is where our senior population is so important to us because they can take a cat in and they won't have the demands of the cat on the cat that a young family would. They won't have children. There's one of the Cocker Spaniels is 10 years old. I can't remember which one it is. And he's good with everything, but he's not good with children. He gets agitated is the word I believe they used.
Mm-hmm.
He's a 10-year-old Cocker Spaniel. He'd be perfect for an older couple that doesn't have children in the home, that whose exposure to children is somewhat limited, and yet give this dog a great life, and he would be a great companion for them. So, you know, if you see a family coming in the door with a bunch of children, because we do a fairly good job of assessing the behavior and temperament of these dogs, our adoption counselors and our staff would certainly not steer them toward this particular dog.
Right.
Because people see the animals, and they may not read the information, or they may discredit the information, or say, well, my kids are great.
Well, when I see the picture in the paper, is it a couple of times a week?
Yes.
And I love that little feature, you know. But it's very telling, that little caption mm-hmm. that's underneath the photograph. I'm Jake, and I'm an active dog. I mean, that says I need to be walked. I need to be, you know, I need to play ball. I need to be out there, and I need a lot of attention. And then there are other animals who, you know, the description will be, I need a quiet home.
So now here's this one. This is another fairly common mix, a Rott German Shepherd mix that we get in. Not enough time for, and we have a comment place. I'm very energetic. I need some training and to be crated when left alone. I'm a big sweetie, but I need an owner with lots of patience.
Yeah.
So we got a call?
Yes, we do. A listener in Kankakee on line 4, toll-free line. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
We have a Black Lab German Shepherd mix that we got in June, and she's 6 months old now. Working on a lot of aspects of training, and I just have a few questions. Like, I'm trying to figure out when my expectations are too high. A lot of people will I'll describe to people what we've been doing and the results, and they're like, oh, she's doing great. To me, I see that, you know, we don't really make as much progress as I thought we would. You know, like, when's a puppy not a puppy?
Well, I have a three-year-old dog, and I always say he just turned three because he still has puppy-like behavior, and you often have to look at your breeding. Didn't you say she's a lab shepherd mix?
She is, yes.
Yeah, and your sporting breeds, your retrievers in particular, sometimes tend to have more puppy-like behavior, mm-hmm. which would be tempered by the German shepherd there a bit, but and Harriet's smiling because she has labs. And
I have three.
Yeah, so that, you know.
Three?
Yes,
yeah. I've and been told they're puppies till at least two.
Well, No. You've been misinformed. they're puppies until they're 5 to 7.
Until they're what?
Five to seven years old.
Oh, good.
But puppy-like behavior, you know, you have now, if you've been listening to the show, there are certain things that, because I've always had retrievers, that certain aspects of that breed that I find extremely charming and endearing. Other people don't. So what is it that she's doing that's puppy-like that's annoying you?
Oh, it's not the puppy-like behavior anymore. I mean, a large part of what was annoying us about her stereotypical puppy-type behavior is gone. Our life has mostly returned to normal, except
that's good.
For integrating the dog walks and everything. But with respect to the training, you know, I just don't know when I'm expecting too much out of her. Sometimes I get frustrated, and I'm not sure if she's just too young. We get what I see as a lot of avoidance behavior, like I will chuck the retrieving dummy, and she loves it. She goes after it, but a lot of times she'll just lay right down right there and chew on it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of another good example.
Well, she's also part shepherd.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean she's going to retrieve for 4 hours in a row like a lab or a golden is more inclined to do. They'll do things like that over and over because it's self-rewarding, whereas a German shepherd likes to play. That's the puppy part, but the retrieve instinct isn't there.
Mm.
Are you taking her to classes or doing that?
I have not been in any classes.
Yeah, you know, if you can find, I'm thinking Kankakee, what's not too far for you to go. New Lenox has some nice training facilities. I don't think that's horribly far. But if you can get in an atmosphere where you can compare the behavior of your puppy at that age to the behavior of the other dogs in the class at the same age, you might be quite surprised to find she's doing very well.
Like in the house with a tennis ball, just right smack back to me every time, over mm-hmm. and over and over for as long as I can stand it.
Mm-hmm.
But outside with the training dummy, she will not bring it back to me at all.
Well, how about the tennis ball outside?
It's usually the same. I haven't done that in a while, but when I bring the tennis ball outside, it's typically she reverts to the I'm going to play with it, there's too many distractions out here phase.
Mm-hmm. Well, you just hit the nail on the head.
Yeah,
the distractions. Well, I can talk a little bit about retrieve. We play a game called flyball, and what's really, really important in that is the retrieve. And I had a dog. I'm not sure I can talk about
I'll talk
it.
About-
yeah, I can do it.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Anyway, he died on Monday, so it's
rough. Sorry.
Anyway, it was we thought it'd be fun to play flyball, and he was a border collie lab mix, and you would think that that's going to retrieve for sure. But he wasn't interested. It's kind of like your dog outside. But we still wanted to do it, but it had to be fun for him. And finally what we did is we turned him into a trader. So anytime I had treats all over the house in my pockets every place because he was very food motivated. And I would have tennis ball or your retrieve dummy around. And anytime he touched it or even looked at it, I gave him a treat.
Mm-hmm.
And we did this for a while. And finally, you know, he was bringing it. He was making me crazy, actually, in the end, because he was bringing things to me all the time for a treat. And that's how we got him to be a retriever to be able to play flyball.
Mm.
So since he will do it in the house, you might try. Don't throw it far, far away, you know, just a couple of feet. And if touches it, then call him back, give him a treat or, you know, whatever he likes, trade the toy. But one of the things that I see when people are teaching the retrieve is they, you know, throw it out there, you know, as far as they can throw it, and then, you know, wonder why the dog doesn't come back. By throwing it close to you, you're going to limit the number of distractions that you have. So maybe your expectations might be a little high for him. Just kind of start, take baby steps, and you'll be rewarded for it.
That's what I'm struggling with is you know, I took baby steps. I'm trying to figure out that line where I can not be in baby steps anymore, if my expectations can be allowed to rise. But I'll try that. Throwing it shorter distances, one of the problems we have is callback, especially outside. As hard as I try running away from her, getting all excited, going crazy, and I use a whistle too, and the signal for that is like a repeating blast, like tweet, 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 tweet. It's not very effective. She doesn't come back to me very much.
Well, the other thing is, when you're working on this as a real training thing, keep her on a leash. Put her on a long lead. We've even taken a clothesline and put a clip on it, so it's a really long lead. And when you want your dog to come, you know, give it a little tug and, you know, kind of encourage her by, you know, tugging her back. Here again, short distance first and then longer. Mm-hmm. But the whole thing is, you don't want to give her a chance to fail. And then the other thing, when she does come back, and then this is the most exciting, best, smartest thing that your dog has ever done.
Right. I go nuts.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, set her up to succeed. And the leash for the recalls is a great way to do it. But here again, not long at the beginning, short in the beginning, and then longer.
Okay. Other problems we have are, it's not really a problem, but just recently I was working on a blind retrieve, you know, directing her to the left and the right.
Are you a hunter?
What makes you think that?
Because those are hunting things.
Yeah, I do. That's one of the reasons I wanted a dog.
Yeah.
But she's a good dog.
Well, for 6 months old, and I see that now I understand a little bit more about your problems you're facing.
Well, see, the thing is, she took to it like crazy.
Sure.
Like, it only took a few sessions, and I could stand 15 feet from her. She would stay when I threw the dummy to her left and right, and then I would give her the signal, and she would go for it. But she quit doing that. She won't stay put at all now, and I'm just wondering.
Yeah, well, you know, the other situation you're facing, and this is something you're just going to have to get through and be patient, is adolescence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... You know, you run to this all the time because the dog up to the age of about 5 or 6 months, 6 months is about right, is very compliant, very willing, very near you and learning like a sponge. And then you hit adolescence, and that can occur anytime between 6 and 9 months. And then the dog, well, it's like a human adolescent. There are other options. So have you trained a dog to hunt with before?
No.
Okay.
First time. I read one of Walters's books about it.
Yeah.
And talk to a lot of my friends.
Yeah, yeah. As far as training for that, I don't know of any place you can do that. You might want to update that reading material.
Okay.
Okay, his books are okay, but they're kind of old, and some of the methodology has changed. But you're going through adolescence. You might be expecting a little too much of her at this age. You might be right.
Okay. I guess I had a mistaken impression on the time period for adolescence. I thought we were actually just getting over it and it was going to get better. But you're saying...
Now if she's 6 months old, you did say that, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you got a little ways ahead of you.
Yeah. And just really remember, keep it positive.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with the book that Carol mentioned, but I'll just tell you from my experience in the animal shelter and recent experience, too, is sometimes people are training dogs to hunt, and there are some pretty nasty methods. And we just recently had a dog in that they were training it to hunt using a shock collar. This dog is a basket case and even had burns on its neck from the shock collar. So, you know, maybe I'm going to get calls from people who train hunters, but this is abuse and it's barbaric. The other one is there's the ear pinch, which I think is also, it's really, really negative. You want the dog to do something because it enjoys it and you enjoy it, not because it's scared to death.
Well, when I start getting angry and frustrated, we quit.
Good. Yeah, that's a good idea.
And
that's
I just put her back on lead and we walk around some more.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've heard about some of these methods. I've heard of one where for a forced fetch where they just pick something off the ground, you've got this apparatus tied to their paw, and if they don't do it right, then it hurts and stuff. I don't do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty much doing any negative reinforcement other than yelling no.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. She's just a puppy.
Yeah, yeah.
Puppy.
Yeah.
So I should not quit training her during the adolescent phase.
No. Just make the sessions shorter.
Okay.
Enjoy the time she's being so good. You know, so often we focus on what they're not doing correctly and lose focus that they're doing something very nicely.
Okay.
Okay? So take every opportunity you can when she's sitting there waiting for you, when she's looking at you, when she's paying attention to you. That's a good thing.
That's one of our problems. I can have her in a sit-stay, and man, she just will not look at me.
That's okay.
I'm going, Lupe.
She doesn't have to look at you.
Lupe.
You don't want her to look at you. That's okay. She doesn't have to look at you.
Right, but if I'm trying to give her a visual signal,
mm-hmm.
I'm waiting for her to look, and she's very distracted.
Her not looking at you is telling you something. You need to figure out what it is.
Yeah. Dog across the fence?
No. I don't think so.
Something else? Are you trying to send me a message here?
No, I just try to help you to figure out what your dog's trying to do. If she's not looking at you, if she's avoiding looking at you, there's two reasons. She's either going to make eye contact with you, and then often that will break that sit-stay, and she'll come to you because she thinks that's what you want,
mm-hmm.
because they read us so very well, or else she's being extremely subordinate by not looking you in the eye.
Oh, okay.
Okay? Which is not a bad thing.
Usually in the park, I think she's looking at something specific.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it could be.
Could be.
With respect to healing, you know, it makes for nicer walks. What's the best way to, when she's doing it right, how do I reward her while we're in motion?
Give her a treat. Tell her she's a great dog. That's a wonderful thing.
I mean, is verbal praise with the proper tone of voice adequate? It's hard for me to, like, because I've got the long part of the lead in my right hand, and I've got the hand close to her neck holding the lead closer, you know,
mm-hmm.
across my body, and then I don't have any hands left to give her a treat. That's what I'm struggling with.
Yeah, well, some dogs respond too dramatically to a treat, and then you lose that focus. But verbal praise, as long as you just don't, you know, it's not ongoing and prattling at her, just verbal praise now and then is fine. She needs to get some feedback from you that she's doing something right.
Right.
Okay? Just like we're giving you feedback?
Yeah.
You need to give her feedback.
I try to. I went with verbal praise because it's about the only thing I knew how to do when
That's
both
fine.
My hands were free and we were walking.
That's fine.
I've read two things about getting them into position. One, that they need to come back to position on their own or the training is ineffective. And two is the sharp tug to get her attention, getting her back into position. Is there a proper technique there?
Stopping walking would be the best thing to do if she gets out of position. Just
okay.
stop and let her come back to you and get herself back where you want her to be. Tugging her and yanking at her will tell her that, you know, if she did something, getting her... having her put herself in the proper position tells her volumes.
Okay.
Okay.
When she gets way out, that's what I do.
Then stop walking and let her
come
back.
Stop walking.
Mm-hmm.
Super.
Okay, have fun.
One last thing.
Every
training session has to end with something positive. No matter how small it is, they have to do something right and get praise for it.
Instead of just ending on a negative note all the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, never
that.
End on if she's has a reliable sit on command, you end it with sit, you know, sit and good girl and off you go. But it has to be positive every single time.
It'd be kind of like, you know, you're leaving work on a Friday and you didn't get a paycheck.
Right.
Okay.
Gotcha.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Anyone else with questions about dog training, dog care, behavior, you can give us a call this afternoon and talk to Carol and Harriet. 333-9455, the number. Anywhere else, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Before we wrap up, I wanted to mention that you brought in these information sheets on the animals that you have, or some of the animals that you have at the shelter. And I'm guessing that are these on the web?
Yes, we have our adoptable pets on the website. It's www.cuhumane, that's HUMANE.org. And you can see all of our adoptable pets online.
Okay.
It doesn't give this information about them, though.
No, it just says.
But this is on
their name
this is
age.
On the front of the run
yeah.
in a plastic
yeah.
container. So,
let's talk with another listener. Caller in Champaign, line one. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
I have two questions. First of all, we're looking at adopting a dog in the springtime from the shelter, and one of the things that I was trying to figure out was. Since you're only looking at the dog for a short amount of time, excuse me, what sort of red flags could you look for, seeing that you're not really going to get a good, you know, good look at the dog, you're not really going to know much about the behavior in the background, what sorts of things should you either look for as positives or as negatives?
Well, again, we go back to what we started with. If you have a family with children, if you and your spouse or a significant other spend a great deal of time away from home or if somebody's home during the day. I imagine you want to adopt in the springtime for weather reasons or?
Mainly, yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you have children?
Yes, we do. Two children, 8 and 10.
you have a good chance, and you know, I'm not going to, we can't obviously be breed specific because we have a lot of mixed breeds, but most of your sporting breeds, which includes your retrievers and your setters and spaniels, are good with children. Any of those mixes are normally pretty good with children. You want to look at the activity level of the dog. The size is going to be a critical factor depending on the age of your children.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've done some research as far as what sort of breed we're looking for. But as far as picking out, let's say there were like two or three different lab mixes, which one would you end up going for? I mean, do you know, is there something you can look for in that short amount of time that would tell you, yes, this dog, yes, maybe no, not this one?
Sure. Basically, with children, I'd bring first of all, if I were you, I would come without the children first.
Okay.
And find some animals that you might like to choose from. Because if you come with the kids, I don't know your kids, obviously, but I know the kids that come to the shelter, is they want to go home with the dog the first one they see that day. So First of all, you go out and you make a preliminary cut.
Okay.
And then bring the kids. And so first thing I would do is watch the interaction with the children and the dog. Is the dog interested in the children? We have some that aren't. So if this is a family pet, you want one that wants to integrate with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Does it jump on the kids and scare it? Now, obviously, you can train the dog not to jump, but the kids might be terrified of the dog before you get that done.
Okay.
So basically, it's the interactions that you're looking for. So those are more positive than red flags, because I hope we weed out the red flags before you get to see them.
Mm-hmm.
But another important thing for everyone to know is you need to take time to make this decision. If you go, you don't go thinking you have to adopt an animal today. If you don't see the animal that looks like it's going to fit in your home, don't get any animal. Come back in a week, because every shelter has, you know, different animals every week. And so just take your time with it.
Yeah, we've been over there a couple of times already just to kind of scout out what sorts of things that we're looking for. And,
yeah,
you know, not with any intention of getting one now. Just
Now that's a smart thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's smart. And, you know, you're not confined to 5 minutes spent with this dog that you might be considering. You can spend as long as you like with
mm-hmm.
the dog. And the more time you spend with it, and then if you decide, well, maybe, let's see, we'll come back tomorrow, you put a hold on the dog that does not make you obligated to adopt the dog, then you can come back the next day, and you can come back the third day if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Not really fair to the dog, but it gives you a good idea of how this dog, when they start to remember you very quickly.
Uh-huh.
And you'll see different behaviors and hopefully really good ones surface.
Okay. And you'll see that immediately. I would figure that if they're in the shelter environment, it's a little, you know, it's not going to be like it's not like going to be taking them home, and there's going to be differences there.
Yes, absolutely. It is a different environment. We have a lot of dog walkers that come out, so pretty much all the dogs get out at least once a day, and it's, you know, on the weekend they probably get out two or three times a day. But that's still different than when they're in a home environment.
Sure.
So, you know, just come spend the time. We have get acquainted rooms so you can let the dog off lead. And I usually tell people to give it at least 10 minutes before you even start thinking about, you know, what this dog's personality is.
Mm-hmm.
And even that, it can take, you know, weeks at home before you really, really see the personality.
I see. Well, my other question was, I was reading in the dog book, and the book may have been a bit dated. It said that you should avoid playing tug of war with your dog, especially your kids, because it shows that, you know, the dog is stronger than your kid, and they're going to figure out that they're more dominant than the kids. What is your take on that?
Well, that advice is kind of broad. As long as I love to play tug of war with my dog.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not a dominant dog. He's not. You know, we're not having some big cold war here over tug of war. We're just playing a game.
Uh-huh.
Having your children, depending on the age of your children, it might be something you want to avoid. There are so many other things to play with your dog than tug of war that it's not, you know, he's not going to suffer some psychological crisis because he can't play tug of war.
Uh-huh.
So I think, in my opinion, that whole thing is overrated.
Uh-huh.
But then it depends on the dog.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, it mentioned that there were certain breeds that it would be more of an issue with, certainly more of your more dominant dogs that you should avoid it, whereas the smaller dogs, it probably was not as big of an issue.
And I think you're pretty good for reading up. It's only November. He's going to be really good by spring.
He's going to be really good, yes.
You can come on the air with us.
Yeah, that would be good.
So, okay, thank you. Uh-huh.
Okay, thanks for the call this afternoon. Right on time.
Yeah, we're good at this.
Good conversation. Harriet, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for letting me come, and thank you, Lisa, for letting me come.
Yeah, thanks for Lisa for...
And she didn't call, and...
She didn't call.
Tom didn't call.
No, we embarrassed him.
I think so.
Jim didn't call.
Jim didn't call.
No.
Oh, no, he has never missed not calling in from a specialty.
Well, we'll talk with you guys next month.
See you then.
Okay. First Friday in December, Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel will be with us. And our thanks this afternoon to Harriet Weatherford for joining us this afternoon. She's interim director of the Champaign County Humane Society. 9 minutes before 2 o'clock, settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thanks, Celeste. From the Board of Trade this afternoon, after a fairly rough week, the board eased up just a bit, some narrower trading range for the corn ranges for both the corn and the soybeans. The wheat finished a little bit higher today as well. It finished up 3.5 cents, in fact, in the December contract with a high of 309, a low at $3.50. This is probably the most active pit at the board for the day. 306.5, the settlement price there. Once again, up 3.5 cents in that December contract for the wheat. The March futures, 322, the high, the low at 313.5. Settlement price at 319.5. They were up 3.25. And the May futures, 328, the high, the low at 320.5. Settlement price at 325, finished the day 3 higher. July contract at 333 high, low at 326. The settlement price at 330.5, up 4 cents. And the September futures, 339 the high, the low at 336. Settlement price at 337.5. That finished 4 cents higher for the wheat. December corn futures now, $2.75 the high. The low at 197.25, settlement price there just under $2 at 199.5. It did finish the day 2 higher. March contract at 212.75 high, low at 208.75, and a settlement price at 211.75, up 2.25. And the May corn, 220.5 today for the high. The low at 217. Settled at 219, up 1.75. July futures, a penny and a half higher on this Friday afternoon, with a settlement price at 225.5, and the July, the high at 226.75, the low at 223.25. September corn futures, 234, the high, the low at 231.25, settled 233.25. They were up 2 cents for the day. And December futures for next year, 242.75, the high, the low at 239.5, and the red December corn settled 242.25, up 2 cents. December oats now, 143.25 high, low at 140.25, settled 140.5. They were down 0.25 for the day. And the March oat contract finished off 0.25 as well at 147.5 with a high of 50 and a low at 47.5, and same as the settlement price. November beans, 510 the high, low at 504.25, settlement price there at $5.05. They were off 4.5 cents today. January soybeans, 510.5 the high, the low at 504.25, settlement price at 505.25, and they were down 1. And the March contract to 517.5 high, low at 510, settled 512. They were up 0.25 for the day. May futures in the bean pit, 523.5 the high, the low at 517.5, settled 519.25, unchanged. And the July futures were 2 cents higher today, 529.75 the high, the low at 524, settlement price at 526.75. They were up 2. August soybeans, a 531 high, low at 527. Settlement price at 528, and they finished the day 2 cents higher as well. From the bean meal pit, December contract down $1.80, 149.50 the high, the low at 146.80, settlement price there 180 lower at 147. January bean meal 150.50 the high, the low at 148.60, and $148.70. The last and final trade for the day down $1.40 for the January bean meal. December bean oil now 20.27. The final trade up 39 cents, 20.30 the high and the low at 19.18 for the Dease bean oil. January bean oil finished the day like this, $20.41 a pound the high, the low at 20.04, settled on that low and they finished up 31 cents. Please join us at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock this afternoon when we'll talk with Mike Zuzlow, Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, about all the trade for the week and what he thinks will happen with both the corn and the soybean markets, along with the perspective on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange and the livestock numbers. Speaking of that, Celeste Quinn is now here to take a look at what happened at the Merc. Celeste?
Livestock prices finished lower today, Todd. Let's start with November feeder cattle. 107.80 the high, 107.20 the low, 107.40 the settlement, that down 2.5. January, 102.80 the high, 101.70 the low, 101.75 the settlement, that down 45. March feeders, 99.45 the high, 98.45 the low, 99 even the settlement, that up 32.5. That's the only plus number we have today on the contracts that we cover here. December live cattle, the high 83.27.5, the low 82.37.5, the settlement 82.45, that down 37.5. February live cattle, 86.40, the high 85.50, the low 85.82.5, the settlement, that down 7.5. December lean hog, 74.35, the high 72.20, the low 72.25, the settlement, that down 160. February, 72.50, the high 71.40, the low 71.60, the settlement, that down 130. April, 67.95, the high 67.20, the low 67.90, the final price, that down 20 cents. And May lean hogs, 67.50, the high 66.30, the low, finishing at 67.42.5, down 17.5. February bellies, today's high 103.05, the low $100.25, the settlement 101.70, that down 80. The Dow is up 60 points at 10,375. The NASDAQ up 8 at 2031. The S&P 500 2 higher at 1146.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety is proud to underwrite agricultural programming on WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Melanie Johnson from Bluntville, Tennessee writes, "Dear Dr. Science, I would like to know why sloths are so misunderstood. I would also like to know why they only have 2 or 3 toes. Why can't people just learn to love sloths for who they are? A sloth is a noble creature that just wants a chance to live in peace and harmony with mankind. Why can't you people get a life and learn to love sloths? A sloth is just one of God's creatures who happens to be but ugly."
Yeah, I think you have me confused with your therapist or someone else who cares about your feelings. Good luck finding such a person. And remember, feelings are not facts.
Thank you, Dr. Science. Send your science questions to Ask Dr. Science. Remember, he's not a real doctor.
I have a master's degree
in science.
Produced by Duck's Breath and distributed by PRI, Public Radio International. For information about the new Dr. Science Get Smart Kit, including his new compact disc with screensaver for PCs and an honorary master's degree mouse pad, all for $21.95, call 800-989-DUCK or visit us on the web at www.drscience.com.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway.